The following podcast is scheduled for one awesome show with a time limit of...
Welcome into Grapple Talk. It is the special Halloween edition. Don't know if you could tell, we got a new intro. Pretty cool.
Now,
pretty
is it
cool
just
beans.
For Halloween, or
I want it to like be for more, that? But AC Riley didn't agree with me on that one. He wants it just to be for Halloween.
Well, maybe it will come back, but we're definitely not going to do it when we are almost at the end of our decade of four.
Aww.
40 through 49.
Everybody? That makes me sad. Nope, that was a terrible, that was bad. Well, it's a special Halloween edition. Your three favorite ghouls are right now talking to you. Not live. We already had that discussion before. Nick Ragnar, AC Riley, Jesse Von Ruden. Halloween this upcoming Friday. Show's going on Halloween, and we're going to tell you about it.
Here are the upcoming shows in your future.
Well, we're starting things off with Stateline Pro Wrestling. That's this Friday at the Fight the Fear Festival. Fusion Sports Center, 7135 Clinton Road at Loves Park, Illinois. Now, Fight the Fear is the start of an anti-bullying campaign because it's anti-bullying month, and, of course, it's happening. This is going on the last day.
Cool.
And to keep people in the know about anti-bullying, because even though it's an anti-bullying month of October, it really should be an all-year kind of deal.
Uh-huh.
It's a campaign designed to work together to help keep our youth happy and strong, but to also help rebuild Rockford starting at the foundation. And, of course, the foundation is the kids.
Uh-huh.
The main event will be Justice Jones taking on the NWA World Heavyweight Champion Rob Conway. That'll
nice.
Be an interesting main event and a good one at that. Our favorite indie wrestling comedian Mikey Wild will be taking the ice pick Vic Capri on in one-on-one competition. Machine, we hear about him from ARW Pro. He'll be taking on one of our guests, Congo Kong. And also in action, Tommaso Ciampa versus Marcelo Spade. And then Trunk or Treat is at 5:30 p.m. Show starts at 7:30 p.m.
Why is it called Trunk or Treat?
You know, that's a good question. I have no idea what Trunk or Treat is.
Is there so much candy that it's in the trunk of a vehicle?
That sounds kind of creepy. Hey, kids.
Hey.
I got some candy in my trunk.
In the trunk of a car or in somebody's wrestling trunk? Because that would be even creepier.
It would just be creepy no matter what.
Whoops.
So I imagine this has something to do with some kind of trick-or-treat thing for the kids. That will essentially constitute why doors would be open 2 hours before the show starts.
Okay.
So whatever it is, it should be interesting. And it's at a festival, too, so it might be actual, you know, you can go around the entire festival and then also get candy from just more than
like
one person.
Other stands or something, or what?
Who knows? If you're in Loves Park, Illinois for Friday and you want to let us know what Trunk or Treat is, we would definitely
help
appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd love that.
You can message us at facebook.com/TheGrappleTalk or tweet us at TheGrappleTalk if you got the answers.
Plug of the day.
Tickets are $15, $10 for kids, and advance tickets, if you get those before Friday, are $5 off regardless of the ticket. That's Stateline Pro Fight the Fear Festival this Friday, Halloween night.
I didn't know that was Stateline Pro. You didn't say that beforehand.
Yeah.
I did that, actually, at the beginning.
You did not.
I did.
Did you really?
Did I say Stateline Pro?
No, you
did.
Yes.
I did.
No, you didn't.
You guys are going to have to listen to the entire segment all over again.
No, we're not.
You know what he's going to do? in post-production, it's going to be like, stay line pro. I mean, it's going to put it in, and it's going to feel really smart. Of course, we also have RCCW's Tricks or Treats on Friday, October 31st. It's at the American Legion Post 52 at 711 6th Street South in La Crosse, Wisconsin. This Halloween-themed event will feature a costume contest, candy for the kids, and a special Trick or Treat series. The winner of these four matches will pick an envelope containing either a trick or a treat. I haven't really heard of this concept before, and it's a very interesting one. One treat will be a shot for Devlin Kane's RCCW heavyweight title in the main event.
Cool.
Of course, we are going to see some matches in that series as Jiggy Jat Spag with Vic Ross taking on Kyle Roberts, who actually used to grow up
right
in this area, went down to Harley Race's camp. He's coming back. He's making his debut back in this area. That's going to be interesting to see him. Plus, our co-host, AC Riley, will be taking on Storm. There's a tables match, Sexy KC against D-Rock Derek Cobain. Now, I got on the horn with Sexy KC earlier in this week because we talk fantasy football quite a bit, right?
Yep.
And he's like, Von Rudin, this one's going to be bad.
Why did he say that?
You don't want to watch it.
Why did he say that?
I'm like, hey, what? You're going to go through table balls first? And he's like, no. No, I'm not going through balls first.
You sound just like him.
I heard there's some talk of barbed wire.
Well, I don't know about that, but if that's the case, that's definitely going to be scary. Of course, we're going to see Phage taking on Jason Allen. That's going to be a good one. Plus, doors open at 7. Action starts at 7:30. Admission is only $10 for adults, 5 for kids, and 5 and under get in for free. So if you're a kid, like 15 and under, yeah, you get in for like the price of 5. That's actually not too bad.
Yeah.
Plus $2 off admission for anyone in costume.
Hey.
It does not include the wrestlers.
So you're saying as a wrestler, if you come to work in costume, you don't get $2 extra on your
payday? No, I think you have to pay an extra $2 to get in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, state athletic commission fee.
Now, is $2 enough to make you want to go dressed in a costume?
I'm going to be there. I'm hoping.
If you were
going as a fan, is $2 enough to make you want to put on a costume and go to a wrestling show?
All right, well, it's Halloween. You're going to dress up in your costume, and there's going to be a lot of festivities downtown. You're already basically downtown here at the American Legion. Why not kill two birds with one stone?
Good answer. Also coming up on
those $2 for shots later.
The following day after, yeah, you are done taking your shots and being dressed up, you can also, might as well, wear your costumes to this event here in Winona, Minnesota. It's at the East End Recreational Center, 210 Zumbro Street. Zumbro.
Zumbro.
So it's like Mumbro, but it's Zumbro.
Zumbro.
Wumbo? Wombat? I can't remember.
I wombo, you wombo, he, she, me, wombo.
Too many SpongeBob references on this show that Jesse doesn't understand.
New
Age Wrestling's Halloween Horror on Saturday. Again, East End Rec Center, 210 Zumbro Street, Winona, Minnesota. Quite a few matches on their card. That will be happening. You're going to see the NAW Championship on the line as Zach Neo, the champ, takes on Aaron Sacrifice. Also, kind of a cool stipulation here. You're going to see the NAW International Championship on the line as Bladewing, the champ, takes on Maru. And if Bladewing's stable, the Alliance, gets involved in the event, then Bladewing will be stripped of the belt immediately. So that's kind of an interesting concept. You have something to say? You're kind of shaking your head.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely interesting because for those that weren't at an NAW show in Rushford a couple weeks back, it was actually the Alliance that helped Bladewing defend the belt in the triple threat. So that's why this is being enabled.
Cool. Also, a rematch from Rushford. You'll see Justin Deason taking on Matt Winchester. Doors open at 6. Show starts at 6:30. Tickets $10 for general admission, 5 for kids. And, yeah, because it is the day after Halloween and it is still considered a Halloween event, if you do wear your costume, you will be entered into their prize giveaway. So who knows what could it be? Could it be, like, WrestleMania tickets maybe?
It's going to be spooky.
It's going to be spooky. Also, yes. Heard that AC Riley has an announcement or will be there for an open challenge. So, yeah, I don't want to miss that one.
Thanks for making that announcement, by the way.
Yeah,
so, is this one the first weekends in a long time you're wrestling both on a Friday and a Saturday?
Actually, yeah. This has actually been it's been a while since we've done that. And also, it's been a while since we've done a double shot in the same day. Remember when we went up to, was it Fredonia? And then we drove right down to, what was it, Cashin, right?
You doing a double shot?
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah, I remember.
That was a lot of fun.
That.
Not really.
That was
wasn't Caledonia a double shot as well?
That was a double shot weekend.
No, it was double shot weekend.
Double shot weekend.
Yeah, Cashin, I remember that because I met you guys in Cashin. Mm-hmm. Also happening on Saturday, WPW will be featuring Hacksaw Jim Duggan at the Shack. That's going to be one of their shows in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. W4786, that's W4786, State Road 23. Right now, ready to appear at WPW's event will be obviously WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Also, Fond du Lac's favorite mailman, Rip Ryan Summers, Bronson Bay, Ian 12 Gager, Shane Hills, Gorgeous Jordy Lee, Psycho Chase McCoy, Dysfunction, and The Stash, Peter Schwanz. This event is sponsored by Anytime Fitness, Attitude Sports, and Phillies on 4th in Fond du Lac. Quite a pretty good list of sponsors, if
I say definitely.
So myself. Admission is only $15. You can see, you know, Hacksaw, all these other great talents are only $15. All ages welcome, and yeah, you are definitely encouraged to bring the whole family to WPW's event in Fond du Lac at the Shack, featuring Hacksaw Jim Duggan. So quite a few shows going on this weekend, guys. But as always, Jesse?
Well, as always, hey, these aren't the only shows going on. Make sure you check out Facebook. We'll have more shows, especially Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's always something popping up.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm speechless.
Are you speechless right now?
I'm speechless.
Come on, man.
No, I mean, the Shack is a great venue. Jesse and I were there for their show featuring Jake the Snake Roberts. It was a great-looking venue. It got packed. And I definitely think they can fill it up again like they did at the show before. And Jim Duggan will be a good guy to bring on.
Yeah,
great guest.
Right, yeah, it's going to be really exciting. What else is really exciting, guys? We don't like to change often. Kind of like Eric Matthews of Boy Meets World. You don't like change. But this week
plug of the day.
But that wasn't a plug. That was not a plug at all.
It was kind of a plug.
No, not really.
It was a plug for Boy Meets World. Leave me alone.
I'm trying to plug. I'm talking about, okay. So anyways, guys, today we are switching things up a little bit. We are doing a new segment. Thomas, take it away.
I got a bone to pick with you. Hindsight Booking on Grapple Talk.
So pretty much, guys, we're going to try to explain what hindsight booking is really quick. We're going to take a look at something that was booked in indie wrestling, kind of in this area, so it can be kind of relatable. And we're just going to kind of talk about it and see, you know, what we would maybe change to try something else new. And Riley, what are we going to be looking at today?
Well, first of all, this is basically what we're going to be doing every time that we're in a car after a wrestling show, except now we're actually recording it. So
right.
For this week, for our first ever hindsight booking, we're going to talk a little bit about the Alliance Pro Invasion that 7RW had a while back. So for those that do not know about Seven Rivers Wrestling or Alliance Pro, the premise was you had guys like David Bonner, Devlin Kane, just kind of doing the invasion angle and trying to take over 7RW.
Right, yeah. I mean, it was a pretty big thing for 7RW at the time. It seemed like it was actually going somewhere. 7RW obviously folded a little too early. They weren't able to follow through with the angle. But this is something that we talk about all the time, guys. Just the idea of having that. A lot of people like to try it out, the whole invasion thing, you know, like the whole NWO thing or the, you know, the alliance against WWE thing when WC, you know, that whole thing. Like, everybody tries to do it. 7RW tried to do it. And it seemed like it was working out really well. But obviously, like we just said, it folded. So, Jesse, why don't you take a stab at it? What would you kind of change if you could?
You know, that's a good question. The thing that I think a lot of people forget with an invasion angle is right away is like, okay, if these guys are not supposed to be here, then why are they coming out of the locker room, number one?
Right.
That's the first thing
makes
I would
no
change.
Sense.
It makes no sense. I would have these guys come out of the crowd. And then if you have security, which we have talked about ad nauseum on the show, it's like, why is security there? A kayfabe reason for security to be there is make sure no one gets in that ring.
Right.
So if these invading wrestlers are coming over your guardrail, why isn't security going after them?
Right.
So that's where I would change it right away. I would not have any music for them on cue or anything like that.
That doesn't
make
sense, yeah.
It makes no sense. You want to make it feel as shoot as possible, especially in this fake world known as professional wrestling. One of the big things, too, with an invasion angle, I'm going to be honest, it's like if you have these people coming in who want to take down your company, then you need that locker room to solidify and protect themselves because this is a place you want to work. So in saying that, at that point in time, you have to have faces and you have to have heels get together and work it out. Now, one of the things I think that really went wrong with the Alliance Pro angle was the simple fact that it didn't get enough time to breathe.
Right.
And that was basically one of the faults of Seven Rivers Wrestling because they tried to rush everything. And it just kind of sucked, too, because you decide to do an angle, especially this hot angle, in a building that was half full.
Right.
And that, to me, that's a big no-no.
Right. And, I mean, speaking of just the idea of the angle and talking about the idea that you needed to have that locker room solidify, I mean, Riley, you were in that promotion, and you kind of were doing your own thing while this whole invasion, like, it was almost like half the card was dealing with the Alliance, and the other half was just, hey, I'm here to work, and, like, nothing's going on. And you were kind of one of those guys. What do you think about that whole thing?
Well, the whole thing with me was that I actually got attacked a few times by Alliance Pro, so it was starting to lead into me joining Team 7RW, but again, it didn't really have a whole lot of room to breathe, and honestly, that's one thing that would have been really great to see 7RW actually see the end of it, but unfortunately, it folded, it didn't have enough financial stability, and honestly, if I could change anything about that, I would have changed who was running the show and how money was being managed, because...
Ooh.
No, that, I mean... It sounds terrible, but it's true, because if that show had a little bit more financial stability, like a lot of shows we know about, that promotion could have seen the end of that feud, and it could have been a really great publicity move for Seven Rivers Wrestling. Because honestly, I would go ahead and say that was probably one of their hottest angles from the entire time since 7RW started to its unfortunate end.
Yeah, it started off really well. I think if actually the whole music thing, I think, wasn't it Dave Bonner and TJ actually came out of the crowd the first night that it happened? And it was like,
actually,
oh.
Dave Bonner, I believe, came through the crowd, and Devlin Kane actually came through the locker room because he's still under contract at the point in time. But still, though, I mean, it makes no sense. One of the cool things, though, that would have happened was AC Riley's storyline with Connor Riley would have blended in to this, and at one point in time, Alliance Pro was supposed to have their own show.
Right.
Think NWO sold out, right? They would have their own referees, their own announcers. You would have been an Alliance Pro announcer, you know?
Yep.
So basically where your character is now as a commentator would have been solidified then, which is, if you think about it, it's kind of crazy because that's over, 2 years ago now.
Yeah, it's weird.
It would have been a really good angle, and I think the end was going to be very much a restart, you know? Alliance Pro would have folded. But it would have been one of those things where those guys still carry that badge on, or, hey, they're a brotherhood type of thing, which is actually kind of cool because if you think about it, that's more of a baby's face thing. Because, at the time, you had Dallas Parker, who was, the figurehead, the evil figurehead of Seven Rivers Wrestling, and how is everyone supposed to have, sympathy for an evil figurehead, you know, because this other group is coming in because he's been running the boys and stuff like that. It would have been interesting to see how you actually turn that guy babyface, which I highly doubt that would ever happen.
Yeah, right.
You know, but... it would have been interesting to see some of the plans they had going forward after that because, once you could reset the bar, anything was possible for them. And it's just a shame that everything kind of just worked out the way it did. It was kind of weird, though, because we've seen kind of a power vacuum in the area in the last 2 years. We saw the reemergence of New Age Wrestling. Elite Pro popped up. RCCW popped up. And I almost wonder if, Seven Rivers would have been around, would these three companies still be running?
That's a good question. I mean, 7RW was... I wouldn't say they were necessarily, it seemed like they were, I don't know what was going on, but it seemed like they were kind of trending downward. I mean, it seemed like their product was actually really, really hot at one point, and then it seemed like for a stretch of a couple months, I don't know if it was just a certain bookings or what it was, but they just weren't filling out venues. And
it was a couple things, really. I think the venue issue, they had issues with keeping a constant venue. It went from Howie's to Allegiant to Winona and then to Cashin. Fans didn't know where they're going to be next.
Right.
That hurts. Not having sponsors hurt.
Yeah.
Because you're taking basically money straight from the ticket coffers today from the promoter's pocket to pay the boys, and that's not going to be an easy way to run a business,
right.
And we see all what happened with that. And I think another thing was really just being too, I would say, strict when it comes to not bending or breaking when it came to, suggestions from the boys.
Right.
And I think a lot of those guys had their best intentions for that company because they wanted to succeed.
Because they're all
friends. That was crazy, you know?
Yeah, a lot of guys really liked working there. It was, one of the best locker room experiences, I can remember. I mean, everybody was super cool. Everybody loved talking to each other. And, yeah, it was kind of sad to see it end up folding. But I still remember that, the nights where they would be running at the Black Horse, and, man, that venue was just so hot sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
It made you wonder why they didn't book their monthly. It was just why? I know they wanted them there, too. And
that's
a
million-dollar question, Nick. We can't really answer that one here on Grapple Talk.
Yeah, we don't have the answer for that. But what we did have the answer for was kind of giving you an idea of what we would do for the rebooking of that Alliance angle. I guess the main thing to do, though, would just be to not pull the company.
Exactly. So Nick, what would you do, after the Alliance Pro angle ended? What would be the first thing you would have done?
Oh, right after it's over? Well, like you said, you kind of reset everything, but then you still have that idea.
We got to stop having him lead, because then he makes so many good points that it's like, what's kind of left?
He's good at what he does. But
smart.
But you have the whole, because you can't just end something like that big and then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, now we're just here. We're just hanging out. You have to kind of continue that idea that they're still a band of brothers. Like, I think we talked about it before, the idea where it's like, well, then now they have to, you have to have somebody come out if you want to keep these guys around that had some sort of a contract clause where they're still working with the business. So even though the angle's over, it's still kind of under the rug. It almost creates a different kind of power struggle between, I think we were talking about maybe like two different owners, where Dallas Parker and Zoe Parker.
I think it was Zoe Parker. Yeah.
Was the other idea.
I think the cool thing was like there was the storyline where we're gonna have like Dallas married into like Zoe's family just to get the money to run the wrestling promotion.
Right.
But she's actually the money lady, which would have been really kind of cool because then you could have saw Dallas Parker be kind of like low rent trash.
Would have been awesome. Yeah. And then, I mean, that whole, you know, battle between now Alliance Pro was brought in by Zoe, and now they're under contract with her, so they're still working for the business. And then it becomes more of just a whole power struggle where you're not seeing promotion versus promotion as much as you're just seeing head of the bunch versus head of the bunch. I just think that would have been a cool angle to go with. And it's just like, you don't like thinking about stuff like that just because it makes you kind of sad for the idea that you could have seen it happen. Because more or less, I feel like the funnest part about being a booker isn't necessarily being the head, you know, and like putting things together. It's watching all those things that you put together play out. It's like, okay, yeah, like I'm the one that said this was, you know, I set this up and now this is what's happening, and just watching it happen before your eyes is probably the
best. What about you, AC Riley? What would be something that you would have changed?
That's a really good question. I mean, like for me, after a huge fallout like that, I mean, whether it was Alliance Pro that came out on top or Team 7RW. Now, you imagine Team 7RW because there's these invasion, you're fending them off. I mean, for me, I would probably almost say to take some time off from the Alliance Pro stable, that they are separate from 7RW, that they're not on the card anymore. You kind of mentioned them, that they were still around, they had this huge war, and now that they're gone, they kind of just disappeared because the invasion didn't work. Why would they still linger for a while and then kind of recycle them back in, but after a short time, to let the fans have that breathing room to really remember, oh, is he going to come back and do this allegiance, or is he going to do an invasion again, you know, and is it going to work, you know, and this time just give it some time. Oh, hey, look, David Bonner's back, or, you know, these guys are back now, you know, they were in the invasion, but now that some time has passed, maybe they're going to work on something else.
You know, I think that's like the key to having, you know, a lot of companies in this area, and that's what might have killed 700W's, you know, thing in the end, is that they didn't have, like you said, they didn't have that constant venue like SWE has. You know, WPW seems to have it, UPW seems to have it, where that fan base can continue coming back and being like, I remember all these guys, I know what's going on, and remembering stuff from the last event. Because, you know, New Age Wrestling, I mean, this is, how many times have they been to the East End Rec Center? I don't know.
This is their second time.
Although they can put on a good product, you know, if you try to continue, something we notice about New Age Wrestling, they don't like to continue those storylines, and most of the reason is, if they go to this venue this month and then this venue 3 months later, it's like, who the hell is going to know what's going on? It's like, hey, you have a guy come out there, hey, you remember last month when I beat you? Everybody that's, you know, and 4 hours away from the last event were like, no, I don't remember any of this because I, you know, I don't know who you are. I'm just, I want to watch pro wrestling. But that's, I think, one of the keys to making an angle work is, I guess, just having that same audience. It's kind of hard in indie wrestling, especially if you need to move around to get a venue.
But. Yeah, definitely. It would have been interesting because I think they were going to go like a traditional Survivor Series thing. It would have been kind of interesting. I think two storylines would have came off of that would have been the fallout of David Bonner being the last member of Alliance Pro to quit. And I think another thing that would have been really interesting to see would have been champion versus champion. That's where they were going to go at one point in time with Jake Classic, who would have been a member of Alliance Pro, against Misfit Manners, who would have been the TV champion at that point in time, or the River Valley champion, pardon me, and seeing where that would have went. Because I think there was a couple twists and turns where it would have been really interesting to see where that one would have went, especially if they're going to go back with their old Gold Rush match, which is a really cool concept.
Yeah.
Like, a guy would win a match, you get two title opportunities. You could write whatever you want with that one.
Which is almost why it's cool seeing RCCW do this whole trick-or-treat thing, because it kind of reminisces of the whole Gold Rush thing. It makes you wonder, oh, I bet there's some creative in RCCW that's working, that's from 7RW, but that's neither here nor there.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I think the best part about that whole angle, it's like, you know, people, like, will harp on the idea of indie promotions running these big-time angles, like, that you see in WWE and, like, you know, WCW, whatever you want to say. And I think they get a lot of slack for that, or, you know, crap for that. But then when it actually happens and you're watching it happen, you're like, this is kind of refreshing. This is kind of nice because now you're seeing it at an indie level, and that's what was so cool about the Alliance Pro angle.
Oh, definitely. It's always interesting, but it always brings back the points like, oh, how many guys can you actually bring in?
Right.
Make it different, yeah. Especially when a lot of locker rooms use the same talent.
Right. So. 100%. Well, that's it for this week's Hindsight Booking. That's our first time doing that, and that was pretty enjoyable. I had,
So if you guys have anything you want us to Hindsight Book in the future, hey, make sure you get a hold of us, either on Twitter or the Facebook, and tell us what you want us to Hindsight Book. If it was like this segment from this week, that would be great.
So, let's rebook it.
Yeah. Hindsight Book Inception.
Ooh, dun, 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 dun. That was supposed to be Twilight. Twilight. Is it Twilight?
X-Files. Zone.
Twilight Zone.
Well, you want to do the X-Files. That's the X-Files. Whatever it is. Yeah.
I don't know what that was. Yeah, were you laughing over there?
I know. It was like, it's like part of the song. Yeah. Look it up, man.
I'm not going to look it up.
Well, coming up next, though, is going to be Gradient. You know what? We'll play the X-Files theme.
Oh,
song,
nice.
So you can actually hear
nice.
It. Nice. Right,
cool.
Now.
Trick or talk, it's Grapple Talk. Happy Halloween. Heading on a wrestling road trip.
Yeah, don't sleep on road trips with the bruises. You either end up without an eyebrow or you got something drawn on your face.
Well, download the latest Grapple Talk podcast on iTunes. Just type Grapple Talk into the search bar. You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Everybody loves Nathan Gust.
Keeping you up to date on Midwestern independent wrestling.
It sounds stupid coming out of my mouth.
If you have a drum set, bust it out, because right now is that moment that you've been waiting for this entire hour. It's Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
Well, this week in the Spotlight in Squared Circle for our Halloween edition, we are talking with a guy that very much epitomizes Halloween here in the Midwest independent scene. Excuse me. We're sitting down with Grin. And Grin, how are you doing today, sir?
Hello, ghouls and goblins.
Wait, so you
get it that Halloween is finally here.
Well, I'm sure you're definitely excited for Halloween. Jesse, on the other hand, saw you shudder a little bit when Grin was talking. Are you ready for this, man?
I got a chill up my spine, guys. I don't know what to say.
Well, speaking of chills up your spine, Grin, you're a guy that definitely puts a chill in anybody's spine, fan or opponent. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Grin the Wrestler?
Well, Grin the Wrestler is just a maniac that likes to scare the hell out of people. Put his war makeup on and his gear and pretty much putting on my real face so I can show my real intentions.
That's kind of creepy. You got to put face paint on to show your real face. Grin, I got to ask you, it's a very interesting name. Usually with a grin, it's signified with, like, happiness and stuff like that. With you, it's definitely scary. So how do you take a name like Grin and turn it into what you need it to be?
Well, that's the thing. You sucker them in with, like, a little teddy bear, and then you rip the teddy bear's head off, and you look at their reaction, and then that's what you get. You get a grin out of my face because other people's misery makes me smile.
That's a great way to explain what makes you grin. Speaking of grin, where did you get the idea for becoming this character that is Grin? I mean, a lot of people have the ideas to do this gimmick because of something in their past. So for you, what's your origin story?
Yeah, I grew up in Calumet City, and my uncle told the guys to put a smiley face on the water tower, and he told me the story, which I don't know true my uncle was, because he's kind of full of crap, but I believed it anyway because I was a kid. And, I just wrote some names down because I knew if you were going to get in this business, you had to be something over the top. And I picked Grin out of all the names I wrote, and I figured what would fuel Grin? What would make him tick? So I figured, other people's misery would make me smile. So I figured, the more misery I put on them, or the more I harass people, or the more I poke a stick at a mean dog, it just makes me happier and happier, and it fuels more fuel to attack them or get whatever they want or, something like that.
You know, Grim, before we started recording, we kind of talked about the idea that, you know, you have this character, but, you know, there's a lot of other people that'll go out there under their real names, under a pseudonym that, you know, is a regular name, Alex Riley, so to speak. But, you know, you didn't take that route. You went the whole, you know, full on. You got the, face paint, you got the war paint, you got the name, you have the gimmick where you're scaring kids half to death. You know, what's the idea behind having just the character that in the gimmick opposed to having that you know, that just kind of generic wrestler guy name?
You know, I almost broke down and decided to take the makeup off. And then I thought to myself, I hated corporate America and I always fight against it. So I have to be something different. Because if you ain't nothing different, then you're just going to be another face in the crowd. And when my makeup is off, I blend in with the people in the crowd. But when my makeup's on, I'm a totally different person. I'm myself. So I stick out more than the normal average Joe. So that's what I want. You know, you come to a show and you see 11 matches. I want people to remember me the most because, you know, I'm not your typical guy going out there performing with a regular name. I'm an actual character, and I try to play my character from head to toe and do the best I can. And it seems like it's been taking off lately, and I'm grateful for it. So,
are you wearing your face paint right now?
That's a good question.
Unfortunately, no.
All right, cool. So we're.
I wish I was. It'd be cool.
Well, we're a little safe then. Grant, who were some of your favorite wrestlers growing up?
Oh man, I liked the bad guys. I was a big Macho Man Randy Savage fan. I loved Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior feud. You know, poor Rick Rude got his ass kicked all night, but he managed to steal the Intercontinental title from him, so that was cool. Kurt Hennig. It's almost different decades for me, but because those are like the guys I liked then, and then as wrestling progressed on, I had different guys I liked. So it's almost different eras.
So we're talking about favorite wrestlers, and you know, for a guy like you, Grin, I gotta imagine that you have a few supervillains in mind from you know, from big superhero names like the Joker, Scarecrow. I gotta imagine are they some of your favorite supervillains to be aware of here in the comic book universe?
Well, when I grew up, I collected Spider-Man and Batman comic books. So, yeah, I guess there was a little bit of influence with, you know, the Joker and the Scarecrow, because Batman's villains were always, like, lunatics. They would always escape from the mental institution. So maybe secretly, somewhere in my psychotic brain, I picked up some of that when I was reading these comic books. So, and then Spider-Man had the same thing, except they were just chemically engineered crazy people. So, you know, it's kind of a mixture of both villains from DC and Marvel. So.
We have guys that come on here, and whether they're, you know, villains in the professional wrestling world or not, they always just simply talk about it. It sounds like you're more embracing it. You love the idea of being that guy that everybody's either scared of or hates. You know, tell us about that. Tell us, you know, why is it so awesome just to be that guy when you come out to the ring?
I've always wanted to act, and I've always wanted to be kind of a stuntman at the same time. So doing this is so much fun. I mean, if you're not out there having fun, then what are you doing out there, you know? And I'm just out there, and I'm doing my best, and it was really important for me to be a gimmick, but it was really, I mean, the most important thing was get the respect from the guys in the back that can work. And I've always wanted to prove that I wasn't going to just be a gimmick that went out there and half-assed it. I was going to be a gimmick, and I was going to be a performer all at the same time and work as well. So it took me a long time to get there. But these last 5 years since I've been in the ring, I've learned so much, you know, in the locker room with, you know, wrestling some of these guys like Vic Capri, Rough Crossing, you know, I could just go on and on about all the guys I've wrestled lately. But, I mean, learning from these guys, my head's like a sponge, you know. I sit there and I hear them talk. I give them my ideas, too, because I've been in the business forever, just like them. But, you know, back then, I think being younger, you didn't really care about what anyone had to say. And you're a little older now, it's like my second time around, and it's like I'm filling a void inside when I quit the first time, and coming back and being able to do this again, I'm very grateful that I'm here and I haven't been injured. And you know, this is it's a great ride. It's like a carnival ride for me. So
talking about quitting and coming back, what was that like for you, Grin? I mean, leaving the sport, did you just have that itch and you wanted to get back, or what was that whole transition like for you?
Well, the one of the reasons why I left is because WWE bought everything. So, and I wasn't really a big guy back then, and it's just the passion was kind of going away with the little companies I was working in because it didn't seem like I was going anywhere. So I kind of lost passion, and when you lose passion, you don't perform at your top performance. And if I wasn't going to be able to do 100% every time I'm out there, then I'm not going to bother. So I kind of left for a while, and I didn't have a computer. Nobody had my number. Nobody knew what happened to me. In 2008, my good friend Steve, which went under Botch, it was tag team with Machine. They were called the Grave Diggers. He had passed, and I went to his funeral, and it was amazing how many people showed up for his funeral. It was a amazing experience to meet and see everybody show up to that, and to be able to bond with Tony Scarpone again, and just talking to everybody that I haven't seen in years. And people were like, Are you Grin? Are you the Grin? And then Tony talked me into coming back, and I came back, and I was out of shape, and I had no idea what I was doing anymore. This is what happens when you sit on the sideline for forever. And so he put me in a match between him and Jerry Lynn, and oh my God, it was a train wreck. Tony never called me back after that. And, you know, I don't blame him, because I had a terrible performance. So then I didn't do it for another 3 years, and I finally got down, bought a computer, got Facebook, found everybody again. People invited me to some wrestling shows, so I went out and checked them out. And I don't know, I just got the passion for it. I got the fire to just want to perform again, and I just had like an empty void, and I needed to fill it. So I went and got my gear, got on some shows, and every show that I wrestled, another booker wanted me to wrestle for them, so I wrestled for them, and then another booker seen me, and then they just took off. I was like amazed. I'm like, wow, this is pretty crazy. Everybody wants me to wrestle for them, and I'm just trying to, you know, get my wheels back on.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I want to go back to is, you know, when you went to this funeral, you saw everybody, you know, go and, you know, pay their respects for this guy that had put a lot into the wrestling business, and unfortunately, his time, you know, came certainly a lot too short than we expected. But one thing that we've actually talked about a few times here on Grapple Talk is that brotherhood in the locker room, inside and outside of the ring. And, you know, it really matches what a lot of people would consider a fraternity. So that being said, have you felt that brotherhood of sorts, you know, with this funeral, you know, with other wrestling events that you've attended? Have you felt that brotherhood?
It was funny. The first time around, I felt it in LWF. I performed there. That's where I started my career. And, you know, Larry, which is Billy Wack, and Mike F. and Brooks, and, oh man, I can name forever. Ringmaster and me, and Machine. Machine came out of there. We did the three rings, first of all, there, back in 1999 to 2002, I believe. But then I kind of lost passion, and at that time, and Ringmaster talked me into going to PCW. So I went there, and man, I did not feel any kind of brotherhood there at all. I just felt out of it. I just showed up, I did my wrestling, the wrestling shows, and I don't know. I mean, I like the performance I was doing, but I just, the passion is slowly slipping, and man, I really didn't talk to nobody. I just showed up to the shows, and I went home because I had to go to work the next day, so I didn't go to the after parties and get to meet people and stuff. So I'm pretty sure that didn't help out at all. But this time around, man, it's incredible. The brotherhood now I have, and the people that, you know, are behind the scenes and I'm friends with and I talk to, it's a good experience. Everything is going very good for me now.
Definitely.
In a good place.
It seems like your career is definitely on the up and up. One of the feuds that you got going on right now is with Rough Crossing. I mean, this is a guy we've got to see numerous times here in Wisconsin. With a guy like Rough, you really need to do those head games. And we saw one of those interesting vignettes that you did. Take us back and what was going through your head when you decided to make this vignette.
Oh, it was great. It seems like not too many people played head games with a cowboy. So our feud was unique to me because it was like accident, too, because I don't even think I was supposed to even feud with Ref Cause. I think the video we did, that you could probably see on YouTube, it's we kidnap Rough Crossing, and I do this song from the 70s dance, and it was cool because we had them tied up, and we did the whole Pulp Fiction, or not the Pulp Fiction, the Reservoir Dogs scene, where they had the cop tied up, and they were pouring gasoline on them. We did that scene with Rough Crossing, and I think after the promoter seen the chemistry we kind of had together, he wanted to put us in a match. And, man, we had a fun match. And then we did a few other, you know, some other videos with him. So I think right there, it just really got to show people my acting ability as well, you know, instead of just the wrestling part. Because I was just wrestling, but nobody really interviewed me, or they never put a mic in my mouth, or they never, like, filmed any skits with me. So, you know, the first skit we did at Blitz, it just took off. You know, we kidnapped Justin Reno and turned him into the Jester, and that was fun. We just kind of did it on the fly, and it worked, you know, and that's when I painted my whole face to the green and black, and it made it just look so much creepier, and I came up with the phrase, it's time to free your mind. So, and I just, it just went wild from there.
It seems like almost a no-brainer. It's like you got a character that's that psychotic. You have to give him a microphone, you know?
Yeah, it is a problem. I was showing up to these wrestling companies, and it didn't seem like nobody knew what to do with me. It's like, and like I wrestled at Premier Wrestling a few times, and I was kind of like just the jobber that showed up and, you know, to get his guys over or whatever, which I didn't mind. You know, I was just, you know, paying my dues still. But they would never... I don't think people got my gimmick, you know. They were too busy with the main guys than worried about the gimmick guy, you know. And so you put a camera in my face and you give me some fuel, I'm going to run with it. I'm going to burn your house down.
Well, please don't burn our house down. That's all I got to say.
So speaking of name guys, as you mentioned, Grin, just recently you had a match with Buff Bagwell of Pro Wrestling Blitz. How was that?
Oh, yeah, that was cool. You know, I didn't know, you know, if we're going to talk, like, wrestling, or are we going to talk, like, reality? Which one do you want?
Whatever one you want to tell us.
Oh, well, then I'll give you the reality. So, usually you don't know how guys are going to be, you know, that's been on that big stage before. So I was kind of a little skeptical about how he was going to come and talk to me and stuff. But he was really a cool guy. You know, I caught him in a crossroad of his life. He kind of told me a story, and I, you know, after a while, I shook his hand, and I'm like, man, I am so glad that, you know, that you're drug-free, and you're healthy, and you got your net fixed, and, you know, so I was happy for that. After we got done talking, we went out there, and we performed. We had a hell of a match. He came in the back, and he looks at me, and he goes, I don't get it. And I go, well, what happened? He goes, well, we had a TV taping match, and the fans didn't seem like they were into it. And I go, well, Chicago is kind of like a spot fest match where if we were wrestled in, say, Tennessee or Kentucky, that match would have been awesome. But, you know, I had a fun time with him. He was a great guy.
You think that the gimmick and everything kind of is what helped make you so successful? I mean, do you think it's kind of helped the character and it has helped eventually propel you to new heights? I mean, because like I said before, we haven't seen something like this often as I'm actually watching one of your Rough Crossing promos. Or vignettes as we speak right now.
Yeah, it's cool. It's funny, when I retired, I looked on the internet and I looked on YouTube, and I'm surprised that nobody ever even came close to anything like my gimmick. And I'm like, wow, maybe it's just meant to be, you know? So I'm just having a blast with it. I'm rolling with it. I keep coming up with new catchphrases, and I'm just trying to be the all-around total package. So.
Well, I got to ask you quick, not so much who's your dream opponent, but who would be your nightmare opponent?
My nightmare opponent. Wow, that's a good one. President now or just anybody in general?
Hey, anyone in general. Could be today, could have been yesterday, could be tomorrow. Hey,
if you think about a nightmare opponent, it could be somebody that passed on and now they're reanimated as a zombie.
Well, I think of two good feuds that I think, well, actually three good feuds. Me and Mankind, that'd be a pretty creepy feud. And I would say me and Sting, it'd be interesting, the two masked maniacs, well, going at it in his prime. That would be fun to see the bright, colory, blonde hair Sting versus the dark, black, bright green, painted-up maniac against him. And I always, like I told Hurricane Helms in a locker room one time, I ran into him, and I said, you know what? Me and you could have had a really cool feud. The superhero versus the supervillain.
Yeah.
And he goes, right. He goes, why didn't it happen? I go, because I didn't make it. And he just laughed.
So, you know, while we're talking about your nightmare opponent, let's talk about goals, too. I mean, you know, when you started off in wrestling, what was your goal as a professional wrestler? What were you hoping to accomplish when you started? And, you know, down the road, in the current time, you know, what are your goals now?
Well, when I first started, your ultimate goal is to get to WWE. But I was totally young and dumb at the time. I had no clue what you had to do to get to the WWE. I just showed up in my trash bag wrestling gear that I had at the time, because everybody starts off as a trash bagger.
Yep.
So I had these wrestling black tights, airbrushed green. But, you know, I did have gear. The other guys were wearing, like, shiny pants from Hot Topic and, you know, tight shirts, where I showed up in a singlet, knee pads, and then I got some Army boots that I taped up like Scott Steiner. So, and I put some real bad generic makeup job on, and I always dyed my hair these weird colors. I think it was like pumpkin orange, and I had fire engine red hair, and then I bleached my hair blonde for a long time there. Yeah, so I tried different things a lot. But right now, everything seems to be just working now. I like my look now, you know. So I feel older and wiser. I kind of know what I'm doing now. But future career, oh, man, it's hard to say what's in store for Grin in the future. I mean, I would love to get to the big show, but the way they run things now, I don't even know if they'd want a guy like me.
So, Grin, you know, we're running out of time here for the Spotlight and Squared Circle, so one last question that we have for you. You know, it's Halloween week, and you are definitely a guy that celebrates Halloween every day, it feels like. So, that being said, what are you going to be for Halloween? What does Grin do for Halloween?
Well, yeah, it's funny. I live on a block that hundreds and hundreds of kids go trick-or-treating on. So every year I dress up as a scary scarecrow and I carry a severed hand with me. And I walk behind people and I put this hand in their hand like somebody else is holding their hand. And they turn around and they see me and they scream and run down the street. So I just scare the hell out of people. It's a blast. That's too much fun, you know?
Have you thought about like hanging yourself up in your yard and as kids go by, go, 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 go.
Yeah, that would be great. Jump off the stick and start chasing after kids. I'm afraid to chase after kids down the street because I don't want no one to get hit by a car. So,
oh yeah,
that's a good point.
I tend to keep the little kids' safety.
At least it only goes that far. Well, Grin, thanks for coming on. Have a happy Halloween to you, and hopefully, you go out and scare some kids and have yourself a good time.
Oh yes, thank you for having me.
That was Grin on Grapple Talk. We have our wrestler's perspective coming up right after this.
There's no need to be frightened of monsters underneath your bed, because three monsters are right in front of you. It's Nick Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden. Listen as these three ghouls terrify the entire landscape in this week's edition of Grapple Talk.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 316 says...
Stop watching your neighbors get undressed. You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is...
Download the latest Grapple Talk podcast on iTunes. Just type Grapple Talk into the search bar. It's not rocket science.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Tis the season to dress up as giant man-eating monsters, aliens, and even prostitutes. It's not weird... It's Halloween.
Wow, guys, I'm glad we actually got through that interview with Grin, because I was pissed myself.
That's funny because I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, guys, this week on Wrestler's Perspective, I'm a little under the weather, so I got to ask you, AC Riley.
It's time for Wrestler's Perspective.
How do you get through a match when you're not feeling your best?
Yeah, that's a good question because, I mean, in a lot of cases when somebody is sick, I mean, they can, you know, like you're saying, you're feeling a little bit sick, and I'm sure it's a little bit tougher for you to do your normal daily ritual compared to when you're healthy, I imagine.
Oh, it's about the same, huh?
It's about the same. Well, in most cases, you know, if you're, you know, just a simple, like, walk to work might be, you know, a little bit more sluggish because you're not feeling 100% or, you know, getting that paperwork done if you do paperwork your job. I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, definitely with wrestling, and that's a very physical, mental, emotional type of deal with wrestling. So, you know, being sick and not being able to really have a whole lot of strength, you know, being kind of feeble, especially if it's a bit of a feverish cold that you're suffering. So, yeah, I mean, it can be pretty tough. But that's the thing is that in a lot of cases, a lot of wrestlers will just say, screw it. I may have the common cold or I might have the flu, but I'm not bedridden. So I just have to say, screw it and keep wrestling because they don't want to lose that booking. They don't want to get blacklisted. In a lot of cases,
you get blacklisted for having a cold.
Jeez. Well, no, not for having a cold, but it's that mentality that if you call, you know, if you get sick that week, and they're planning to book you, and then you're saying, hey, I'm sorry, I can't wrestle, you know, then they might, you know, we already had this discussion about promoters if they should or shouldn't blacklist their wrestler. But I mean, there's always going to be those promoters out there like, oh, you know, he kind of backed out. He said he was sick, but I mean, you know, what if he wasn't? You know, they don't really know unless you're like, selfie, I'm in bed with tissues and stuff like that, which is just stupid.
It sounds like something you would do.
No, I actually don't take selfies. Sounds like something Nick would do with his drawings over there.
That's pretty nice.
But no, it's that thing where unless you, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, I'm going to take it to the bank, you know, unless you're bedridden, you know, you cannot go to work, you cannot do anything, you are stuck in bed because you are that sick, you know, you should still try to make an attempt to make the show.
Here's the difference, though.
Yeah.
In wrestling, you're, like, up on somebody. Like, you're physically, like, you know, right here.
Yeah,
like,
you're half naked. Let me
get you. So it's like, do you really want somebody else's sick armpit just f***ing groping you right there across your head and then giving you the headlock? Like, do you want that as his opponent? Like, do you want to get sick? Because you're going to get... you want to know how to get sick? That's how you get sick.
I don't want to get sick, but that's the thing, is that it would be on the wrestler who is not feeling at the greatest condition. He's feeling under the weather, he or she. It's their responsibility to not only make sure that they're, you know, keeping the sickness contained in sorts, you know, bringing the tissues or having the cough drops or, you know, whatever. So then when they come up to the show, even if they are feeling a little bit under the weather, that they're still able to get through the match because that's what they were booked to do.
All right, cool. So this past weekend we heard about, what is it, BCW actually had their flu epidemic down there as well. And plus we had that in Supreme Wrestling Entertainment when we had the flu battle royal.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's one of those things where it's going to happen. Is it smart to wrestle when you're not feeling the best? Probably not. Do promoters need to understand that people get sick? Yes.
Yeah. Probably.
And have a backup plan. Yeah. You know, it's just the way life is. You know?
It's like,
should they have a backup plan? Yes. Do most of them have the backup plan? No.
Well, when your backup plan is, well, you know, not having a backup plan, you should probably have a backup plan.
No, I agree completely, but the bottom line is that in most cases, I mean, most backup plans are to scrap some matches, you know, stitch a few together, but then it comes down to if, you know, because we're getting in that time of the year where a lot of people are going to get sick because it's getting colder out, and, you know, people are just going to naturally get, you know, under the weather. So what happens if half your roster pretty much is sick, you know?
Well, after a show, they're probably going to be sick.
So. No, before a show. But
still, though, like, okay, so have you ever wrestled under the weather?
Not Ebola, but I mean, I've had.
Oh, way to go! Way to go!
Way to go with the Ebola. Best reference of the show.
Way to go! I'm glad you didn't have Ebola when you were wrestling.
Me too, actually.
Yeah, way to go, champ! Way to go, gold star! But you had like a cold, right? How was that?
It wasn't fun. I'm not saying that it's the time of your life to wrestle while you're, you know, under the weather. I'm just saying that sometimes, you know, it's an obligation at that point. You know, you're booked to wrestle. You've been booked for a while, and then you get sick the day before the show. You know, it's an obligation at that point. You know, you still gotta maintain face, go down there and do the show, and just do your best not to get anybody else sick.
Alrighty, well, that's the answer for you. I guess go wrestle when you are dying on your deathbed and you're sick. And
hey, if you are bedridden, stay home. If you are not bedridden, make an attempt to go out and do the show. And just because you're wrestling doesn't mean that you have to put on this 5-star, 20-minute Ironman match. You know, just, you know, take it easy.
Have you ever been to an indie wrestling promotion? Every match needs to be a 5-hour Iron Man match. That's how every match.
No, it doesn't.
Be. Yes, it is.
No, it doesn't.
Every match.
Yeah. Know your role in the match.
I would just say take care of yourself.
Know your role, jabroni.
Yeah.
Know your role.
Me?
Yeah. Shut your mouth.
I see what your eyes are doing over there.
Shut your mouth. You shut your mouth when you're talking to The Rock like that.
Me.
Oh, wait, no. You need to talk because it's time for your segment.
If you're Bruce Willis or a diehard wrestling fan, here's Tape Study with Jesse Von Rudin.
Anyhow, this week's Tape Study, actually, guys, it's we're going to go back in time a little bit to May 5th, 1996. It was for FMW. It was a no-rope electrified barbed wire match.
What?
Yes.
Funky Monkey Wrestling?
No! Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling from Japan, you asshole. Study up in history.
Hey, Funky Monkey Wrestling also has that
title. All right. You wrestling. That's all I got to say. Yes, that's right. You put that down on your counter. But anyhow, man, you got to know who the hell Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling was.
Yeah, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Are you?
Yeah.
Do you know who they were?
I do.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You want to enlighten us?
No. I know the name. I don't know anything else.
So anyhow, they were having one of their big shows. I believe it was their 7th anniversary show. And it was an interesting match because it was the first time ever you actually had a women's death match.
And it was a women's match.
Yes.
Even better.
Even better. It was Combat Toyota's retirement match. She was taking on Megumi. Pardon me if I pronounce your name wrong. Please don't hunt me down. Kudo. Was his last name. I remember actually watching.
She's been at death matches, man. She probably could kill you.
Yeah, she could, and I would be cool with that because this was a very interesting match. I still remember the first time I actually sat down and watched it. It was actually Halloween, right?
Really?
I was probably about 15, so about like 15 years ago, right? And I was watching through the whole tape, and I'm like, man, there's just nothing on this tape that excites me, right?
Right.
I didn't get to watch this match, and it's beautiful. I'm just going to say it right now. It is absolutely beautiful, not because of the barbarity or the brutality, is because of something known as selling. These two women sell their asses off in this match, and tell you the truth, it's one of those things that really shows the beauty that could be a deathmatch type of style. Do you need to do it all the time? No. Is it okay to do it every once in a while? Yes. If you sell it properly, and you make sure people believe in the violence, and the violence is definitely going to be something that's going to be career-altering. Now, if it's something that's going to happen every weekend, screw that, right?
Yep.
But as long as it could be something that's going to alter someone's career permanently, then it's going to be definitely interesting. It's actually kind of cool. Like, Kuda, like, she got a bad rap with a lot of the Japanese women's wrestling community because she got out for a while. She was a school teacher. She got back in. She cut a pop album. If we ever find this thing,
what?
Pop music album. Like,
what an interesting career.
Yeah, I know.
Is that one of her songs? Maybe, yes. It must have been like, I like to roll around in barbed wire or something.
Oh, okay,
like
yeah.
But anyhow, she got a lot of flack for it. A lot of people think she couldn't work, which we hear a lot of gripes about the divas right now.
Right.
But she really proved herself, and she became one of the top stars in Japan. And Combat Toyota was one of those other ones as well. A lot of people thought she was just a knockoff of Agent Kong or something like that.
Right.
And she really proved herself, too, there in FMW. And it's one of those matches where I think it really inspired a whole generation of wrestling fans and wrestlers itself.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
we'll
put the link up on Facebook. We'll put it on Twitter as well. And then you can figure out what Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling was all about.
Sounds good to me. You know, speaking of that album, I bet if you talk to Melanie Cruz and you ask nicely, she could probably dig into trying to find that album for you while she's still in Japan.
Yeah, she's coming back here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, she's middle of November.
Middle of November.
She's over there. Should she get booked for like all these shows? That's why she's over there for so long? Is that kind of how it is?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much her schedule is that she trains about a good chunk of the week. She has a day for being touristy, and then she wrestles just about every weekend there.
So was she a full-time wrestler before she left? Was that like her job was wrestling?
I don't know. I never really asked her what her job was. I just assumed it was wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
She was good enough to be a full time, but I mean, I just didn't, I wasn't sure.
Yep.
I couldn't imagine seeing her, you know, walking into Kmart. Hi, my name is Melanie Cruz. Head scissors. It's like, oh man, because it doesn't translate.
Speaking of,
this is Melanie Cruz here with AT&T.
That'd be terrible. Speaking of Melanie, she actually just wrestled at the Cora Kuen Hall. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I know about the building you're talking about.
But yeah, she was very honored to be part of that. So you know, I can only imagine that that's definitely going to be a very peak career point for her.
It's a legendary place to wrestle at. It's very similar to we always hear people talk about how they want to wrestle at the ECW Arena or Madison Square Garden. That is definitely the place to be in Japan.
Yeah, that's cool. Cool stuff. And speaking of cool stuff, we are going to get out of here for Grapple Talk. We have some trick-or-treating to do for Nick Ragner, AC Riley, and Jesse Von Rudin. We'll catch you Knuckleheads next week. Stay classy.
Happy Halloween.
Well, next week, guys, it is time to hashtag some stuff. Hashtag Rise of Matthews, Chase Matthews, coming on to sit down with your boys from Grapple Talk.
You know, Chase Matthews definitely been on a roll in the indie scene as of late, so glad that he's able to take a little bit of time to come talk with us this week.
Well, we're going to ask him all the hard-hitting questions like, how do you take care of your beard? How do you come up with really nice hashtags? Where do you get your gear? What kind of matches you want to see? And so much more.
Yeah. Speaking of hashtags, there's another one you can do, hashtag AskGrappleTalk. You can do that on our Twitter or Facebook and get any of your questions that you want to hear from Chase Matthews, and we'll ask him.
Yeah, because we're nice people like that.
We are. I don't know about Nick, though.
Well, Nick's a really nice guy.
Thank you for tuning in to Grapple Talk.
I'd be like, dude, you just ran into my dick smash. And they'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm calling the cops.
I'm speechless.
I'd be like, so you're going to hit me? Is that what you're foreshadowing?
With Nick Ragner, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Rudin.
Congo! Come on out if you hear me!
I don't care who you are, you fat freak face paint. I'm Scott Steiner, big bad booty daddy.
Big bad booty daddy. Oh, no, I'm coming down now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can't understand what he's saying half the time.
I spent a lot of time dyeing my goatee to make sure it looks this way. I'm going to get killed by
him. Yeah, he's going to listen to one of these.
I love you, hear me, Scott Steiner.
And this is going to be
the one. He's going to big pop-up pump your face in.
He's going to give you one of those.
Happy Halloween.